Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. It's John Vocat, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning in to the award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, this morning we're going to open inviting everyone to the cool, creative, and exciting happenings that are all part of the month-long International Festival of Arts and Ideas in and around New Haven throughout most of June. We'll hear from the festival's program director about some of the specific ticketed and free events, lectures, exhibits, and performances that will be part of this year's festival. Then I'm dedicating our next segment to my colleagues from the Newtown Volunteer Ambulance Corps as we celebrate EMS Week 2017. We'll talk with a longtime responder, learn about some of the newest life-saving technology emergency responders employ on the front lines, and chat with a couple of medical professionals at Waterbury Hospital's emergency room about the important role EMS plays, as well as introducing a new public safety initiative called Stop the Bleed. Then we're going to close introducing you to Zero, the End of Prostate Cancer, the leading national nonprofit with a mission to end prostate cancer in our lifetime. And we'll call you to support the cause at the first Zero Prostate Cancer Run and Walk coming into Hartford on June 10th. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vocat, right after this reminder. Mental Grit Fitness of Fairfield County is hosting its 8th annual Push Against Cancer for Kids with a push-up challenge for those who want to help kids who face health and medical challenges. Individuals and teams from across Connecticut will show their strength and determination to raise money for the Hole in the Wall Gang Camp on Sunday, June 4th from 9:30 to 11:30 at the Levitt Pavilion for the Performing Arts in Westport. If you'd like to get details on that event, just click on holeinthewallgang.org. Well, it is time again. That's right. Just a few days away as we're broadcasting our program this morning for the International Festival of Arts and Ideas. A fantastic 2-week-long event happening in New Haven, an international destination not only for the artists, dancers, actors, musicians, and others that'll be participating, but for folks who come from all over the world to see some of these unique presentations. Some of them will be a one-of-a-kind experience. Others will be the beginning, middle, or end of a process. There'll be some headline artists that you'll get to see, some great ticketed events, headliner bands, and here to talk about it is our brand new friend Chad Herzog. He is interim co-director and director of programming for the International Festival of Arts and Ideas for 2017. ArtIdea.org.
ArtIdea.org
is the website to go to learn all about it, as well as get linked to ticketed events and details about parking and things like that. But first, we want to find out a little bit about Chad. Chad, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you ended up here with us in New Haven.
No, thanks, John. Thanks for having us here today. I got to New Haven 2 years ago, almost exactly 2 years ago. In fact, the day the festival started in 2015 was my first day living in New Haven. Before joining the festival, I was working for a liberal arts college in central Pennsylvania called Juniata College, where I was director of arts and culture. Did very similar work there to what I'm doing here at the festival.
Excellent. So tell us a little bit about your understanding. Did you know about the festival when you were teaching elsewhere?
I absolutely did. The festival has international notoriety. In fact, it's funny. You can be all around the world and mention the International Festival of Arts and Ideas and people hear of it. You can be in downtown New Haven and you might have to explain to some people what it is. It's just like...
why are they up there at lunchtime and eating pizza?
That's exactly right. Yeah. But the festival does have great notoriety around the world. It's always, for the last 21 years, it's been something that colleagues of ours around the world have looked to as an example of what a festival should be like.
Excellent. So coming into it, what's your understanding of what has been done before that folks who come every year regularly for the many years that it's been in existence may see as a little bit different? The timeline, I guess, being one thing that is a little bit different this year.
Sure. The timeline is a little different this year. This year, we're calling June Festival Month with our first performances happening in the pop-up pop-up festivals on June 3rd through the end of the festival on June 24th. Mm-hmm. That's new to us. Normally, we would define a date range as the time of the festival, but we are calling June Festival Month. Something else that is a little different to people is that the last number of years we've been on the New Haven Green for three weekends. This year we're on the weekend on the green for two weekends. So that might be something different. Some exciting things that are different though is we're taking our ideas program out on the road and a new program we're calling Ideas on Foot. That is where our ideas talks that normally happen in an auditorium where panelists or speakers will speak in front of people in these auditoriums. We're now going to three different neighborhoods in the Dixwell neighborhood, the downtown neighborhood, and Wooster Square for some of these idea programs.
Now that concept it didn't launch this year, did it?
That is, the ideas program on foot is brand new this year.
Oh, okay.
The concept of doing tours for the festival is something the festival has done for a number of years now.
Oh, okay.
So this is, if you're familiar with our tours programs, the way I like to explain it is that these are tours on steroids for sure. So rather than walking to a number of locations during an hour or so long tour, now we're going to stop at two or three locations and really go in depth of what it means for these places in our neighborhoods.
Well, we'll be drilling into some of the specifics, but let's start with these tours. Tell us trinity of stops that folks might enjoy before the main event really starts getting hot and heavy down in downtown New Haven.
Yeah, so we have tours all over the city from touring the Audubon District to the Botanical Gardens to the Whitney Water Treatment Plant to Massaro Farms. Concat does a tour for us. We look at the Hunger Museum, Adams Center for the Arts, just all over. You can tour. Some of these tours are walking. We also do bike tours.
Oh, wow.
We do kayaking tours down the river.
Yeah.
So all kinds of different tour programs for people to sign up for.
And are those aspects of the festival free to participants, or is there a mix of some that are not?
All of those are free for people to participate. We ask that people register in advance, and you can do that online at artidea.org, but it's a free registration. That just lets us know that we'll have room for everybody that shows up.
Excellent. I see also that part of the festival is bringing on a partnership with the Big Read.
We do. We do have a partnership with the Big Read. This is the third year that New Haven and the festival have participated in the Big Read. The first two, though, were 10 years ago.
Mm.
This year, we have this Big Read book called Into the Beautiful North. It is a book about these young women living in Mexico who are searching for the men that have left their families to work in America. And it's a very timely read today, and will culminate the Big Read experience. Things are happening all during May and June, but will culminate the experience with the performance of a band called Troker on the New Haven Green on June 17th.
Hmm. And is that book geared to young adults on up?
It really is. In fact, all juniors in New Haven are reading the book in their classes. But you can pick that book up at any of the New Haven Free Public Libraries. At Junta has copies of the book, and you can go online to artidea.org and ask us for a copy. We have copies available to try to get the city and the region to read this book, Into the Beautiful North.
That's fantastic. And tell me about Altered Spaces.
Altered Spaces is another one of our brand new programs. And this program really came out of an opportunity for us to highlight some of the best artists in our region. And this is where we are moving into the four churches on the New Haven Green. And we'll have 14 performances taking place in those churches from mid-June to the end of June.
Mm-hmm.
Just great music, dance, theater. And these are people that, you know, some of us may have heard of by because they're our neighbors. These are many of these musicians or performers play outside of our region all of the time. But just as I was explaining earlier about the festival, we don't know our neighbors as well as we do the people coming in from outside of the area. So we're excited to highlight, you know, again, music, theater, dance, rap, storytelling in these altered spaces. And the ticket prices are cheap. It's $10 to get into any of these performances. So the price point's good for everybody and should be a fun evening.
Fantastic. My dear friend Jimmy Green is part of the bill this year.
Yes, Jimmy Green is
reeled him down from Danbury.
He's back, right? Jimmy and his band played the festival a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Jimmy, as you know, has a brand new album out. Yep. Beautiful 2 is the name of it. And Jimmy, this will be the first time Beautiful 2, the album Beautiful 2, will be performed outside on stage with string players.
Fantastic.
The album just dropped, and that's Father's Day, so what a great way to spend Father's Day evening.
Yes.
Bring a picnic out to the green.
I think that's the one for me. And a film festival.
We have the film festival that we've been partnering with the last couple of years, New Haven Docs. This is a festival that highlights some of the great and greatest filmmakers in the area, and then national films as well. That these are free movies you can go to throughout the week, and then hear from the filmmakers during discussions. There's a panel with Penny Baker and Hedges, which will be very enlightening for all of us. And New Haven Docs is really a great local resource that I'm not sure a lot of people know about.
Folks, if you're just joining us, we're having a great conversation with Chad Herzog. He's interim co-director and director of programs for the International Festival of Arts and Ideas 2017. Artidea.org is the place you go to learn all about it. Festival 2017 boasts a diverse group of participants from all over the globe, as well as leading artists and innovators from New Haven and across Connecticut. As you're hearing, folks like Jimmy Green, this fantastic series of it called Altered Spaces, participation with the Big Read and the Documentary Film Festival. We're now going to move into some high points and a little known secret gems, as Chad has been helping to line up all of the performances. And Chad, I guess one of the things that would bode well to get more people out to the festival would be the end of TV. So if people aren't watching TV, maybe they'll come out. And coincidentally, maybe. One of the ticketed events is a cinema premiere.
This is it's actually live theater that has a cinema feel. So think shadow puppetry. And when you go back to your days in elementary school, think about those overhead projectors that your teachers may have used to put the lessons up on the screen. This theater company based out of Chicago called Manual Cinema takes these projectors and creates live cinema in front of you with live music. So they have a great band that plays these beautiful shadow puppets and other puppetry techniques that they use. And what's fun about Manual Cinema and the show The End of TV, at the end of the performance, audience members get a chance to go up on stage and play with the puppets and make their own little puppet shows. Manual Cinema is just one of a few festival commissions that we have and world premieres we have. So you come to Manual Cinema, End of TV on June 19th, you'll be the first person in the world to see this performance.
Wow, that's great. Yeah. And as you mentioned, the Big Read is very topical to things going on in our country, in our world today. Apparently, Theater of the Oppressed is also bringing in some very topical subject matter.
Yeah, Theater of the Oppressed is a company based out of New York City, and their performance, We Are Citizens, works with people here in New Haven who might have some hard stories to tell, some stories that they're not used to telling on their own, or something that they may not have ever shared with anybody. Theater of the Oppressed works with these people and helps them learn how to tell their stories. And then we see the stories being told as theater on the stage.
Fantastic. In the last few minutes that we have, we talked about Jimmy Green, but we also have some other great folks coming in. Rusted Root, a fantastic upbeat band that's been around for quite a long time and really involves the crowd. The Wailers, of course, we know from the back in the Bob Marley days. These are the some of the original members, and these are two of the free concerts, right?
Those are both Rusted Root and the Wailers will be free on June 24th at 7 p.m. on the New Haven Green in the KeyBank stage.
So then in the last couple minutes that we have with you, Chad, how about a couple of the no-cost little hidden gems that might be kind of buried in the schedule that you think people might be entertained, especially if they're coming with kids and families?
Sure. So a couple of those on the weekends during the festival, June 17th and 18th, we'll have our annual Box City, where kids get a chance to build their New Haven out with boxes, working with regional architects. That's always a good time. On June 17th, we also start a new program that we've been partnering with Creative Arts Workshop called New Haven Story, or I'm sorry, New Haven Photo Day. This is where people are encouraged to get out their phones or their cameras and take pictures of their city. You can submit your photos then, and those photos will be shown the following weekend on the New Haven Green. We have a program we're calling Trash and Fashion, where a fashion show built out of trash. And so that should be fun. We have all kinds of programs that involve eating tours or eating. So from beer and oyster to beer and cheese to circus on the green on the evening of June, what is that, the 22nd, with free contemporary circus happening, gospel fests happening on June 23rd. We have all kinds of master classes that are free for people to take part of. Our ideas program, where you hear the brightest thinkers from around the world speaking on very topical issues. Tim Snyder, history professor at Yale, with his new book on tyranny, How Do We Survive This Time That We're Living In? Bassem Youssef and Taylor Mack. I don't know if you know Bassem, but Bassem Youssef is the John Stewart of Egypt. He had 50 million viewers a night.
Huh?
Not five, 50 million viewers a night. Yeah. He'll be here with Taylor Mack, who was at the festival a couple years ago, talking about what it means to build community.
And I guess anybody within the sound of our voice who has always said, I think I might like to dance, I might like to learn how to dance, but I'm not a good dancer, June 17th is the day for them.
June 17th is a great day for them. And actually, if you like to dance or if you're into dance, first you should come June 15th and 16th to Camille A. Brown and Dancers, their performance of Black Girl that really uses social dance to tell a terrific story of what it's like to grow up today in this society through the black gaze. On June 17th, you from going to a dance competition on the stage that is curated by a young man in New Haven, Bryce, to a salsa dance lesson at 5 p.m. from at least the South of Salsa. You're going to want to move at this festival.
Billed as the city's largest dance lesson.
That will be
another one for Mr. Two Left Feet here to come out to. That'll be fun. As you're hearing, we probably covered a sliver of the activities that are happening, whether it's to stimulate conversation, your activism, your creative juices, or just to sit and enjoy visually the music, the movement, the art and artistry. It's all happening in New Haven, as it is every year at the International Festival of Arts and Ideas, with all of these pop-up and extracurricular events kicking off on June 2nd here in New Haven. We hope folks will come down wherever you may be listening. The city welcomes folks from all over the world for this festival, and I'm so pleased to make the acquaintance of Chad Herzog, the interim co-director and director of programs for the International Festival of Arts and Ideas. Artidea.org is the website to go to learn about it all. You can check out the free activities, find out about which ticketed activities you might want to go to. You'll even get some tips about parking. And don't forget Pizza Fest happening on the green in New Haven as part of our partnership with The Connection. You can also head down. There'll be some entertainment going on during that as well. So, Chad, great to meet you. And thanks so much for being part of the program.
John, thanks so much.
We'll see you at the festival.
All right. Take care.
Well, just about this time every year, we celebrate National EMS Week, and 2017 is the 43rd annual National EMS Week, and we're joined again by emergency medical technician Jeremy Rodrigo with AMR, and this week we are in the field with AMR, and it just so happens that as we were doing a ride-along, our ambulance got called to meet LifeStar helicopter transport. So we're here at Waterbury Hospital, standing by for the LifeStar landing. And once they take care of business here at Waterbury Hospital, we'll be right back to you in a much quieter environment. We are now back at the headquarters of AMR in Waterbury with Jeremy Rodrigo, who's not only a representative of AMR, but also a longtime emergency medical responder with Beacon Hose Company No. 1 in Beacon Falls. This is the 43rd annual National EMS Week from May 21st to 27th, established in 1974 by President Gerald Ford to celebrate EMS practitioners and the important work they do in our nation's communities and here throughout Connecticut. Jer, thanks for joining us again and having us at your house.
Oh, it's great to be here, John. Nice to see you.
So as technology is escalating all around us, the same goes for the world of emergency medicine and emergency medical response. Can you talk to us a little bit about some of the latest innovations that help emergency medical responders do their job better and help to protect and potentially save the lives of more patients?
Sure. Well, from the initial dispatch of how the call is received to the field units that are arriving on scene, the equipment and the technology is really, we're just taking advantage of technology that's out there, just like your cell phone technology and other innovations. So when you're calling 911, oftentimes the dispatcher knows exactly where you are, even if you're on a cell phone. They're able to provide you information in real time about how to help yourself or the person you're calling for. When EMS arrives on scene, they're being kept up to date as they're driving to your house as to the condition of the patient, all through either radio links or cellular technology or mobile data terminals that are in each ambulance. EMS arrives on scene. Not only is the ambulance with carrying two highly qualified EMTs or an EMT and a paramedic, but you're also carrying all this equipment that is very, very precise, highly technological, but also connected to the hospital where the patient's going to be received.
Oh, okay.
So now we have equipment that we're connecting to the patient. So we used to just have radio links with the hospital. Now we've got radio links. We've got our equipment that's connected to the person is actually now telephonically connected to the hospital, so the hospital can look at this in real time as to the patient that's still maybe 15, 20, 30 minutes out in the back of an ambulance or in their living room. And it's so sophisticated that the physician who's going to be receiving the patient may be looking at this patient's vital signs and other statistics on their cell phone as they're walking to receive them, or they're leaving their home.
Wow.
To go to the hospital to open up the cath lab to do a cardiac catheterization.
Wow.
Or it's amazing. I mean, so the technology and sophistication is out there. I mean, of course, the most sophisticated thing that we carry is a good qualified EMT and a paramedic that are using their head.
And that brings us to this gentleman, this fine gentleman.
Absolutely. This is Jose Matias.
Jose, how are you? Thanks
good.
For joining us. So for folks that are tuning in, we're celebrating National EMS Week this upcoming week. It's the 43rd annual National EMS Week, May 21st to 27th. We're here at the headquarters of AMR in Waterbury, kind of talking about the before and during the emergency response. And then we'll be heading off to Waterbury Hospital to talk to some folks about some important things that you need to know about the synergy between EMS and the emergency departments, as well as touching base a little bit on the program called Until Help Arrives and the Stop the Bleed Citizens Bleeding Control Program. But right now, Jose is going to show us one of the key pieces of equipment that EMTs and paramedics use in the field. And Jose, former career firefighter, actually, I understand at Bradley Airport, drove the big truck.
Trucks,
but also, I guess it's important for folks to know at this point here in Connecticut, at least, that they may be seeing firefighters at their door a few minutes before an ambulance even ever gets there. And these firefighters are also very, very well qualified to intervene.
Yes, very well. We have a tier system with AMR and fire departments and police, where police are dispatched, fire and EMS is dispatched. So sometimes, for example, in Waterbury, we have a fire unit that responds, and they're on scene prior to us. They have first responder training. For example, they can do a Narcan for opiate overdoses, and they have an AED that can actually defibrillate a patient and initiate CPR by the time we get there. So basically, it's absolutely first aid. Actually, it's a seamless transition when they're there and we come on scene. For example, we have the LifePak 15 here, physical control. We're actually able to connect to their cables, so the time is limited as far as being able to start CPR, analyze the rhythm. This is brand new. We have every paramedic unit will have a LifePak 15. Then take blood pressures. We have a, it's called a rainbow cable. This rainbow cable is allowed to read pulse oxys and carboxyhemoglobin for, say, firefighters if someone's involved in a smoke condition. Oh. Can actually read that. We'll actually be able to do an AED component where automatic external defibrillation. Also, we have a metrodome here, and it sounds, just do a quick note here, but we actually use that for first responders, so they're doing the CPR to that count.
Oh, okay.
And also, we'll intubate. And then we switch it over. So the paramedic is doing the job of 10 people, basically. IV, medications, defibrillations, monitoring. And here, this will assist us with the first responders to initiate CPR and then combine that with administering ventilations to help the person breathe.
Oh, okay.
So it works very well.
So this is an example of the latest technology that's available to emergency medical responders that actually takes the place of manual, a combination of what used to be manual Correct. And much more rudimentary electronic equipment.
Correct. And as Jeremy stated earlier, this actually can match with the hospital that's when we receive the patient, and we have actual transmission of EKGs where the doctors actually see it, 20, 30 minutes before we get there, to activate a cath lab and have the patient actually transport just straight upstairs to the cath lab to initiate therapy.
Excellent.
So it's very well.
And just before we let you go, tell us a little bit about the results, because we're going to go from your interview down to a Waterbury Absolutely. Hospital emergency room where we're going to hear about that handoff. But so much now is being done in the field to make the docs work easier and the patient safer.
Yes, we have what's called a STEMI alert, STEMI. It's a ST is a segment where we monitor on the EKG, and that tells us that the person is having some type of myocardial infarction, death of the muscle. And the E is elevation, MI, myocardial infarction. So we have a STEMI alert. When we get STEMI alert, the doctor will receive EKG. When we get there, normally the patient will stay on the ambulance stretcher and go right into the ED and upstairs. And what they start is their therapy, their evaluation, and as soon as possible, less than 5-10 minutes, they're upstairs in the cath lab. So it's real time. We work very closely with the hospitals, and it's a new program now that we are initiating with them for time, because the time is so critical. Less than 15 minutes on scene. By the time you get to the scene, within 5 minutes with transmitting EKG, you're on scene no more than 15 minutes just to get that person to the hospital en route. En route, you communicate, you contact medical control, let them know what you have, and devise a plan right early from the start of the connection with the patient.
And I guess there's no more potent definition of the term time is money than when it comes to emergency Absolutely. Medical response. So this kind of equipment actually puts information into the hands of doctors in the emergency room so they can be best prepared to receive that patient. But it also sort of, it's a time machine. It encapsulates Absolutely. The time. So as soon as the ambulance arrives, the actual mechanics of this might already be in place by the fire responders.
And also, we're part of the system. So once the pre-hospital care system, once we connect with the hospital, they initiate their STEMI alert. So you get all the doctors come in, the catheterization, everyone's in place by the time you get there. And then we have a follow-up. Waterbury Hospital sends out to our clinical education supervisor results of what happened. So we see real-time as to what happened. They'll send us pictures. Your slides and actually will let us know how the patient outcome was. And it's very excellent relationship we have with Waterbury Hospital.
Well, we thank you for your service, Jose, and Jeremy Rodrigo as well. Jose Matias with AMR here, giving us a little bit of an orientation to the newest technology available to emergency medical responders. So we're going to take a quick break and jump in the ambulance and head down to Waterbury Hospital ER to talk to a couple of folks there. Part of our celebration annually of National EMS Week. 2017 is the 43rd annual National EMS Week, and we thank you guys for getting us started. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Hey, did you know that May is American Stroke Month? Stroke is a leading cause of disability and death, yet recognizing the symptoms quickly and getting immediate treatment can save your life. Stroke symptoms occur suddenly and may include numbness or weakness in the face, arm, or leg, severe headaches, dizziness, confusion, or trouble speaking. Successful treatment depends on prompt diagnosis and immediate care, so get emergency medical help as soon as you see the signs. And if you'd like more information, you can visit radiologyinfo.org. So we've moved back into the emergency department here at Waterbury Hospital, and we're pleased to be joined by Dr. David Knight and Chris Strachan. Chris is the trauma coordinator, but we're going to talk to Dr. Knight first, an experienced emergency physician. Dr. Knight, if you could just explain to the folks that are listening a little bit about how today's EMS practices in the field help both you and your team do the best possible job that you can do, and how positive patient outcomes have a higher degree of positive result because of the training and expertise of the emergency medical technicians and paramedics in the field.
These days we get much better information. We get the call patched in indicating that a patient is coming. So we have some idea of what we're going to be dealing with, and we can prepare, the trauma team can prepare in that way for when the patient arrives. And then when they bring the patient in, not only do we get the report from the scene and the EMTs talk about the, like in a car accident, the condition of the vehicle and stuff, but I think one of the amazing things now is because everybody has a cell phone and can take pictures. And so they will bring in photographs of what the car, for instance, what the car looked like. Mm. And that, it just sort of helps bring home to all of us the what the accident, you know, what was going on and mechanism of injury and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's all of that is extraordinarily helpful.
Mm. So that being said, and the fact that just a few weeks ago our program did a feature on the concept of telehealth and actually having live interaction from the patient at home to the doctor, are we approaching the point where you're going to be having real-time video and not just a phone call or a EKG sent to you electronically?
I think that's entirely possible. Again, thinking about a motor vehicle accident or something where the victim is, for instance, trapped in the vehicle, I think having a real-time live hookup, live video, because it's nothing quite like seeing the patient to get an idea of what's going on.
Mm-hmm. So let's just talk a little bit about when you started in emergency medicine and the shift in how much is being done on behalf of the patient now in the field by these trained paramedics and emergency medical technicians that used to all have to be done after the wait, after the rescue, after the ride in.
It was during my residency that we set up the system of trauma alerts and early warning system that we now use. And mm-hmm. certainly in the beginning and prior to that, nobody really had any idea what was coming in. And I think as you say, I think the EMTs didn't have the experience and the backup to do the kind of things that they can do now. So the patients came in less resuscitated. And so I think the whole system has improved significantly just in my 30-something years as a surgeon. Mm-hmm.
And in terms of information, because we always like to use this program as an opportunity to educate the listeners, given the fact that many of them will probably have to call 911 and interact with an emergency medical team at some point in their lives. From your perspective, is there something that you could advise to folks that are listening that they might possibly remember in that white-hot moment of panic when something happens to somebody they love or they come upon a situation where there's an emergency medical patient situation? Anything that you would say would be an extremely important thing for them to remember?
I think for the most part, probably the important thing is to make it short and just give the necessary facts, because when you're in that scenario that you're describing, someone calling 911, they probably don't need their professional opinion about what might be wrong with the patient, because they probably don't know. Mm-hmm. And the sooner the EMTs get to the patient, the better everything's going to be. So that doesn't need to be a lot of talking on the 911 call.
Okay.
Just make it short so that they can get the EMTs there and get the patient into professional hands quickly.
And the dispatcher's probably asking the most critical questions.
Right.
Listening is probably another key element.
Correct. I think that's right. Yeah.
Well, Dr. David Knight, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to just talk with us this morning and giving us your perspective and with all the experience that you have, very much appreciated.
Thank you.
So as we are looking across EMS Week, the 43rd Annual National EMS Week, May 21st to 22nd, the American College of Emergency Physicians are sponsoring a daily activity as part of the celebration. Monday is Education Day. Tuesday is Safety Tuesday to promote safety for the EMS provider. Wednesday is EMS Day for Children, where they highlight the special needs of caring for children. And Friday is Celebration Day. It's EMS Recognition Day, where many hospitals and emergency agencies across the country are doing breakfasts, lunches, dinners, award ceremonies, and things like that. But Thursday is Save a Life Day, and it's promoting two important programs. The first is called Stop the Bleed, a Citizens Bleeding Control Education Initiative, and Active Bystander CPR program. So we're going to turn to Chris Strachan, who's the trauma coordinator here at Waterbury Hospital Emergency Department, to talk a little bit about the Stop the Bleed. Chris, we've talked for years and years about the evolution of citizen CPR and understand the importance of that. But I guess as we've kind of moved into this new era where Lord knows what's going to happen next, folks need to step up and have a little bit more knowledge and education to help save a life in these critical situations, whether it's car accidents, some other kind of trauma, or God forbid, some sort of a terrorist activity. Tell us a little bit about what you know about the Stop the Bleed program.
Thank you. The Stop the Bleed program is one of our two really important injury prevention programs, actually, where that we're going to be doing some outreach on. We're going to be trying to get into some community areas to get the Stop the Bleed program out there and get people educated about how to actually control bleeding and what point to use a tourniquet. The American College of Surgeons is really instrumental in getting this education out to the hospitals so that we can get it out to the community. They're sponsoring this program, which is the overseeing, the American College of Surgeons is the overseeing body of the trauma system that we have in place today. So they kind of help us to drive this extremely essential information, getting it out to the public. Mm-hmm. The Stop the Bleed program focuses on A, recognition, B, bleeding control, and calling for help. So the ABCs of bleeding control.
Okay.
Really stressing, because to hold good pressure for 3 minutes takes a lot more work than you would think. Mm-hmm. You get distracted, you lessen your grip, and the patient can continue to bleed. And any arterial bleed that doesn't have that direct pressure for that amount of duration really isn't going to get that patient under control. So how do we get them under control? How do you pack the wound? And how do you know when it's time for a tourniquet? And getting help right away, just like you would if it were a CPR situation, so that we can get the patient into the hospital and get that patient the bleeding control that they need. Because if you don't have blood, there's not much left.
But I mean, I'm recalling back to my days in scouting as a child and an adolescent, learning just like a couple of the basics, and how that has kind of stuck with me for the rest of my life. I did have to employ it at one point in my life, and apparently it made a difference because the guy brought me a basket of fruit a couple weeks later. So and were thanking me for like saving their dad. So I don't know if that was the case, but I mean, this is rudimentary information that really anybody can learn, and it could make a life and death difference.
This is absolutely information that anybody can learn and should learn. The goal is to get this out into schools, community centers, places. The Stop the Bleed kits that are out there should be as prevalent as an AED. Because you can know how to stop the bleed, but if you don't have the glove, if you don't have the gauze, if you don't have the tourniquet available to you, it makes it a little bit harder. We do teach strategies if you don't have it available to you, but the other goal for the American College of Surgeons would be to get these kits out into the community and have them readily available for people that need to respond to them to be able to respond to them. They have their beautiful, nice, wall-mounted kits, just like the AEDs out there now. And it is just as essential as teaching CPR. And I'm also a CPR instructor and faculty for the American Heart Association for ACLS and CPR. So to me, these two programs should be hand-in-hand out in the community, getting everybody the information and the skill they need to stop bleeding and, if we needed to, provide essential compressions to save a life.
Excellent. Great information. Chris Strachan, trauma coordinator here at Waterbury Hospital Emergency Department. Here as we wrap up our program in celebration of the 43rd Annual National EMS Week. If you'd like more information, the American College of Emergency Physicians website actually has a page devoted to the ways that communities and citizens and non-EMS and ambulance and emergency groups can help to celebrate or support their local emergency medical organization. So if you'd like to check that out and find out how you might be able to help celebrate your local ambulance crews, volunteer, EMS, paramedics and firefighters also, who are now a big part of the emergency response team, as we heard earlier in the program, you can check out the American College of Emergency Physicians website. We want to thank our guests here at Waterbury Hospital, once again, Chris Strachan, Dr. David Knight, and Jeremy Rodrigo, who is our regular liaison for our EMS Week activities with AMR. Thank you, folks, for helping us celebrate 43rd Annual National EMS Week. Well, folks, we are so pleased to make a brand new friend, and we've made many, many friends on the award-winning For the People over the past 26 or 27 years, and I'm so pleased to welcome Zero, the end of prostate cancer, by far nowhere near zero when it comes to making a difference, because Zero, the end of prostate cancer, is the leading national nonprofit with a mission to end prostate cancer. Zero advances research, improves the lives of men and families, and inspires action. They're building Generation Zero, the first generation of men free from prostate cancer. And as regular listeners know, a couple of times a year, we have medical experts on the program that are talking about this important issue, because it does affect so many people. As a matter of fact, we were talking about it just a few weeks ago. So our guest on the program this morning is with the organization, and we are pleased to have her. Amanda Pini is with us. She is the Marketing and Communications Manager at Zero. Amanda, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
So real quick, before we get into talking about how to get more Connecticut folks involved in the upcoming event, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be affiliated with this nationwide and such an impactful organization.
Sure. So I came to Zero about 2.5, 3 years ago with a public relations background, and I lost my father to cancer and thought, you know, there's something more that I can be doing to help end this disease that affects millions of people every year. And then I found Zero here in, we're based nationally out of D.C., which is where I live, and it all was uphill from there.
Excellent. Folks, if you're interested in learning more about all of the things that Zero does, you can go to zerocancer.org and check out their website as we are looking at it now. I see that one of the latest issues that you guys are watching very closely is the Affordable Care Act situation going on in Washington. Can you tell us a little bit about how developments in that arena might impact both the work you do and your goal?
Yes, definitely. So the passage of the American Health Care Act was of great concern for not only prostate cancer patients, but all patients with pre-existing conditions. We have recently celebrated a bit of a victory for prostate cancer research in that the prostate cancer research program was funded at $90 million for fiscal year 2017, which is a $10 million increase in funding. But with that victory, we are concerned because access to care is every bit as important as research. You know, if patients don't have affordable health insurance and can't benefit from, you know, the medical discoveries that are coming out of that research, then the research is a bit squandered if people can't benefit from it.
Yeah. We're also hearing great things in regards to public outreach, especially to various demographic groups that have a little bit more of a predisposition to prostate cancer. And I know you guys have a lot to do with that. Tell us a little bit about some of the great successes that you guys have been celebrating over the past few years since you've been with the organization.
Certainly. So as I mentioned just now, the $90 million in funding is a huge victory for us. And recently also the United States Preventive Services Task Force also upgraded their recommendation on prostate cancer testing from a D rating to a C rating. So we like to say that as C, C your doctor. Men are now encouraged to talk to their doctor about prostate cancer testing, which they haven't been in the past. So we're working to reverse kind of 10 or more years of men being told that they don't have to talk to their doctor about testing. And as you mentioned, African-American men are almost 2 times more likely to be diagnosed with prostate cancer. So with that new upgraded recommendation is the caveat that more research needs to be done into the reason for that, and so that we can continue outreach to more African-American men, knowing that they're at higher risk. Mm.
And at the same time, research on other fronts is starting to push toward your goal. It must be pretty exciting to be involved with an organization where, even in such a short time as a couple of years, you're seeing medical advancements that are making a real difference towards your push for zero prostate cancer world.
It is, and it's so great to see all the different things that are happening. Even from when I just started, like you mentioned, we're seeing, immunotherapies and treating cancer come out and come to the forefront, genetic testing for men, and to see, you know, how aggressive their disease, genetic and genomic testing to see how aggressive their disease is, just things like that that we, you know, didn't have the benefit of years ago that now we have the opportunity to take advantage of to help and save more men from the disease.
Excellent. Well, on June 10th, folks, if you want to make a difference and contribute not only toward the important research and outreach that we're hearing about from Amanda, but also supporting this goal and putting your stamp on the success when Zero Prostate ends up celebrating a world without prostate cancer, we hope you'll come out on June 10th to the Zero Prostate Cancer Walk and Run in Hartford. Amanda, let us in on all the details about that.
Sure. Sure. So it's, like you said, Saturday, June 10th, begins at 9 a.m. We're at Dunkin' Donuts Park in Hartford. We'll have a 5K run walk and then a super cute kids superhero dash for dad, where all the littlest members of our community get superhero capes and get to show dad, you know, how important it is that he take charge of his health. There will be a family-friendly post-race celebration, and anyone who participates in the 5K will get a shirt. There will be free food and the chance to connect with others who are impacted by the disease. For this event, we partner with Hartford Healthcare, Talwood Urology, and Kidney Institute. They're wonderful in putting this event on and making sure that everything is great for all the people who are participating, the survivors, the patients, the families, and even just everyone in the community.
Yeah, and you mentioned survivors, and there's nothing like going to an event like this and seeing the numbers of not only survivors but caregivers that sometimes accompany them, and to it really gives you a handle on the difference that the kind of research that Zero is supporting is making. Because you know, perhaps 10 or 20 years ago, if your organization was doing the same thing, we wouldn't be seeing all of those survivors.
Absolutely. And I've been to several events. I'll actually be at this year's Hartford event. And just to see all of the men who have beaten the disease, they're connecting with each other. And if, you know, it's always so heartwarming to see a man who maybe is newly diagnosed and isn't as familiar get to speak with someone who's been through it. One in eight men will be diagnosed in 2017, and that is over 2,000 men in Connecticut. So it's just great to see all of those survivors out there being able to spread awareness to people who may not be aware of it.
Mm-hmm. And as far as the game plan or the goal to getting to zero, obviously we want to see that being done in our lifetime. But is there, as you folks interact with researchers and others that are involved in finding a cure, are you getting some idea of how close they're starting to feel? Are they feeling the traction of the positive information and results that are coming from the research that Zero is helping to support?
Absolutely. It's hard to say, you know, exactly when we would see it, but it's every day we see new treatments and new diagnostic tools and new, you know, stories of people who have no evidence of disease, who are stage four, you know, when they were diagnosed. And it's just amazing to see the momentum that we have, and the additional funding for research can only do good things to continue to build on that success that we've seen so far, so that we can get closer to Generation Zero, which we consider the first generation of men free from prostate cancer.
Mm. The other thing that we're starting to do a lot more on the program is to talk a little bit about the value of every dollar that's donated. And I was so pleased to learn how much of every single dollar that's raised is actually going back into the hard work of research, support, and outreach that Zero does. Can you just let people know what that magic number is? Because you guys are pretty close to the to the triple A mark when it comes to rating for giving back out of the donated dollars.
Absolutely. So we see 94 cents of every dollar to research and programs. And in addition to our run walk series, we also have, and the research that you mentioned, we also have a wonderful education and patient support programs that are just so important for helping men who are diagnosed and maybe are unsure of what to do outside of, you know, what they've seen from their doctor. And if they don't know anyone who is diagnosed, we have, you know, these educational materials for people on our website at zerocancer.org. And then we also have a program called Zero 360, which is one-on-one patient support for men from any range of problems, whether they need, you know, specific paperwork for health insurance, to, you know, what financial assistance is available to them to help them pay for their treatments, to, you know, how do I keep the lights on while I'm paying for my cancer treatments. And this Zero 360 is one of those resources that will help them one-on-one figure out the answers to those questions and more. So in addition to the research and the Run Walk series, we do have wonderful, you know, education and patient programs that just go a long way for helping those men who are battling the disease right now.
Fantastic. The End of Prostate Cancer, Zero, is the leading national nonprofit with the mission to end prostate cancer in our lifetime through research, improving the lives of men and families, and inspiring action and outreach. We're so pleased to once again invite you to participate in the Zero Prostate Cancer Run and Walk at the home of the Yard Goats at Dunkin' Donuts Field in Hartford. That's coming up on the morning of June 10th. We hope folks could come out. In the meantime, once again, you can always go to zerocancer.org to learn more about the organization and other events, perhaps how to do some fundraising of your own for this cause. We want to thank our guest this morning, Amanda Peeney, who's with Zero, for being part of our program and helping introduce us to the cause and this upcoming event. Amanda, thank you so much for being part of the program. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheelers Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.